And looking back on that, my response, because I was in kind of charge of things, I could have taken my side and walked out. I probably should have done that at the time. I learned an awful lot about politics through this, where I knew nothing before, and political strategy and what they did. They took things right out of a playbook and like, okay. And I was, you know, learning as I went along. But my response to Henry Cooper should have been, you know, I had over 4,000 signatures on a petition. And I could have gone through that petition. I could have picked out names. And those names are the names that are in the graveyards and on the post office, on the mailboxes, going back generations before Judge Cooper founded Cooperstown. So, you know, this is the legacy and the history here. You know, he's talking about something that's in a book written by James Fenimore Cooper. I'm talking about the living history. Here we're still here. We're still here. These names of the people that settled around the lake. I'm the Allens. My family, the Allens, Allens Lake Road. At the foot of Allens Lake Road is where, on Route 80, is where the OCCA and the Segal Land Trust have their offices, you know. You go to the top of that hill, and my ancestor, there was a Civil War veteran that was captured and spent time in Andersonville. He's there. If you go up by the old Deer Run Motel and you go out Hoke Road there, there's a little cemetery with two graves in it, and that's Ann and Hall. And he spent the winter with in Valley Forge with George Washington. So, you know, that history, doesn't that account for just as much as James Fenimore Cooper, in a sense? Because we're still here. Here we are. And we stood up for this country, you know, in every war that we've ever fought. My family has been in every war until the most recent ones. And we have some, you know, not relatives by marriage over there now, but that's not the bloodline. But I think that looking at it in a historic sense is important to do now. I think that we really have to, we just can't keep butting heads the way we have over these supposed environmental issues that really were a smokescreen. There was a meeting of the Federation of Lakes Association, which is a statewide organization. So all the lake associations from around the state. And back at that time, people up there thought it would be a good idea to invite them to Cooperstown, stay at the Otisaga. There was a big panel discussion. I was on the panel, and of course, I'm the only person in favor of the boat launch on the panel. And all the people out there that are informed public, that run lake associations from around the state. So I'm sitting there, thank you, Jesus. Several of the people got up, like the people that ran large lake associations, like Cayuga Lake, Seneca Lake. You know, and the words actually came out of their mouth that the fuel station up there was offering an environmental smokescreen on the issue, and that's pretty much what it was. Because every scientific thing that they came up with there, we had science to counter that. So we had the moral, the social, the protection of the lake in mind, all these little things we want going along, but we lost the battle. And how it eventually ended up, I think what the death knell was a full page ad in the Albany Times Union on the back of the front section, the whole thing, that Segal Lake is going to die or whatever like that, and 30 organizations that signed on against the boat launch. Probably over 20 of those organizations did not exist. So again, you know, we're up against a political playbook. So I used to say, the rules in their playbook were, you know, don't tell the truth, lie, and rule number three, let's see rule number one and number two, because it was a concerted effort to put us in the worst possible light. And again, you know, going back to the legacy and the history of it, it is abusing and disrespectful to all those guys that love that lake, that lived and fought through World War II to come back to take a little fishing boat out and go fishing, okay? That's all I'm trying to protect here. I'm not trying to pollute the lake. I'm not trying to carve out an empire up and take anybody's money or change the characteristics of the lake at all. As a matter of fact, it's quite the opposite, you know, because I think, we really want to protect the lake, you know. If they wanted the reservoir, and that was brought up at the time, you know, like it's a drinking water supply. Well and fine, you know, Skinny Atlas Lake is a drinking water supply for the city of Syracuse. There's boat launches up there. There's public access to that lake. There's docked in that lake. There's fishing in that lake. You know, what makes Cooperstown so much better? And that's the problem. That's the problem, because they're putting themselves in that position where they're better than the rest of us, or better than the other lakes, or deserve some kind of special consideration. Well, we all deserve special consideration. All the lakes do. So that argument falls on deaf ears with me. And also, you know, it's been 50 years since that field station's been open, and Bill Harmon has been running that for 50 years. I would hope that you know, whoever goes up there next might have a little friendlier working relationship with local groups. You know, and every year there's statewide organizations: the New York State Conservation Council, the Fish and Wildlife Management Board. And every year when they make requests to the public and at their annual meetings about what the public would like to see, the number one or number two is going to be a boat launch on a Seagull Lake. So that it continues. And I dropped out of it. I was living in Colorado. I came back, and you know, but the issue will never go away, because the issue has not resolved itself. It might have been buried for a while, but it hasn't been really fully addressed the way it should be. And I think that we would all feel better. And I think, you know, the economic argument, too, you know, is there. You know, there were a lot of small mom-and-pop operations, bait shops and this, that, and the other thing that, you know, provide services in motels and, you know, to fishermen. Fishermen are a driver to the economy, and you can derive those numbers from the state. They have the numbers. At the time, it was $101 and change that the average daily, you know, you know, I didn't want to make that argument. You know, that's well and fine. Sure, it would boost the economy and provide a few jobs, but I think that the moral and social aspects of it, I can imagine. You know, a boat launch on the lake, and I can imagine that it would be good for the lake, you know, with all that I know. I think that, you know, it's an emotional bias, but I really, you know, I've known the lake my entire life. Like I described to you, I learned how to swim up a public lane in 1952. I didn't really learn how to swim. I held onto that bar so tightly, they had to peel me off it. But, yeah, it's a lovely lake. If you get up along your side of the lake there where you're staying, and you get up, if you go to the condos in Five Mile Point and you drive up, actually there's a couple of places where you can look down and see the lake, like you're looking down on an alpine lake type of deal, you know. Yeah, it's really, really, really pretty. And I've been out on that lake at 4 a.m. at 40 below, digging holes to go ice fishing, when there was no one on the lake. I was the only person on the north end of the lake doing that. I used to park at Public Landing and walk a mile down through the snow, break a trail to my shanty, and spend the day or the weekend, you know. I have a fantastic bedtime story I used to tell my children in the Winter Carnival 1979. And I was looking for the wall. I historically had been in a lake that nobody had seen in years, you know, and if they did see one, it was going to be a big one. So I'm going to go out and I'm going to night fish for walleye. And so my wife, my ex-wife, drops me off at Public Landing. I walk down, and I spend the night in my shanty. So it's the carnival. It's the Winter Carnival in Cooperstown, 8 miles down the lake. So about 1 o'clock in the morning, I hear this. And there was no snow on the ice. It was good ice, and there was no snow on it. And I hear a car. And I could hear the car because there was no exhaust system on the car. So it was a bunch of young guys in this big old heap of a Buick or a Pontiac or something. And they came down out of Public Landing a mile up the lake. And they come down the lake 80, 90 miles an hour. I mean, they're charging down the lake. This is 1 o'clock in the morning. And then they turn the wheel, hit the brakes, turn the wheel, and do like maybe 20 360s. It was amazing to watch them go down the lake. So, you know, I get out of my shanty to watch this, you know. Then they take off down to the Winter Carnival and the bars in Cooperstown, right? And I forget all about it. So I've got all my stuff out there. It's the middle of the night, and I decide I'm going to take a nap, you know. So my shanty was very, very comfortable. So I lay down on my bench, and I nap for a little while. I don't know how long. Then I wake up, And I sit up and I made myself, I have a little Coleman gas stove and, you know, a teapot, and I heat up some water. I'm making instant coffee. So I make myself some instant coffee. And at the end of my shanty, it was pointed, the window was at the end of it, was pointed at you know, Cooperstown, at the end of the lake there. And through the curtain, I see light, you know, headlights. And, you know, I'm not quite awake, and I'm not really thinking much about it. And I look up, and the lights are, you know, they're coming up the lake. And I sit there for a minute. And then it dawns on me that there's no lights at the north end of the lake. It's the middle of the night, and I've got these drunken guys in this car. And they probably think I'm a light on shore. And you lose your perspective over water or over ice like that. So, you know, depth perception becomes strange. Every year, people get killed and standing in the middle of the lake by some snowmobiler coming up to them, showing off, being funny, and they don't have that. And they run through them at 70 miles an hour because you don't have that depth perception. So then I realize, oh, crap. You know, these guys are headed right towards me. They're doing 90 miles an hour, and they're all drunk. So I had this vision in my head. I had a spud, an ice spud, you know, a big, heavy ice spud that I could move my shanty, dig my shanty out with, that I was going to get out there like Ahab, and I was going to spear the block of their car as it went by, you know what I mean? And I got my tip-ups out there, you know, and they cost money, you know what I mean? And it's not insubstantial, you know, to replace a tip-up and your bait and the whole thing. So, so when I opened my shanty door, and they're about like half a mile away. So they see the light spilling out of the shanty. Then they realize I'm not a light on shore. Otherwise, I think if I had been napping there and had that light on or something, just sitting there drinking my coffee, they would have run right through me. Right? So so the car pulls up. Door opens up, and the driver falls out on the ice. I was fishing, you know, yada, 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 yada. I said, I got my tip-ups around here, you know. All well and fine. They pile back in the car, and they go off several hundred yards, and they stop. Then I can hear a discussion, argument, and the one guy says, oh, you won't, I will. And they trade drivers. Then they go back, they do a loop around the lake, and they come back up. And the next journey up the lake, there was only a couple on the lake, the whole lake at the north end at that time. Pow! Drove right through it, not knowing if anybody was in there. Boom, drove right there. So I know the guy. So the next morning he comes out. It's a Sunday morning. He was going to move his shanty. He had taken everything out. He didn't have a stove in there, a lot of other, luckily. But his shanty was now just splinters. He comes down. He comes over and I said, yeah, I told him the story. And he was, you know, a young, bearded, tough guy in construction. He's going to go get these guys. So he takes off. He piles all the wood in his back of his pickup truck. He drove down the ice. You could do that. He drove and he threw it all in the back of his pickup. He takes off up a public landing, and he's off down to the bars looking for these guys. And then I'd been out there all weekend now at this point, and my wife is picking me up Sunday, 1 o'clock. So I pack up all my stuff, and I go back up to public landing. She's not there. And I wait, and I wait, and I wait, and she's not there, and I wait some more, and she finally shows up. And coming down the road, public landing road, she had run over the nails and the boards that this guy had bounced off the back of his pickup truck going on. Now it's Sunday afternoon. Where do you get a tire changed in Springfield, New York? You know what I mean? I finally made it home. I don't know. It was dark on Sunday afternoon. You know what I mean? I don't know how long I slept. I ate a big meal, and I slept forever, you know. But I used to tell my kids that as a bedtime story about the Winter Carnival in 79 in Cooperstown, you know, and how exciting that was. And they had the opportunity to be out there and fish with me, you know. So, great memories.
Well, I think
you got to go.
But thank you so much.
Well, no, I thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I really appreciate, you know, what you're doing and your interest in history, and I don't know what you're going to be in 5 years from now, you know. Maybe working in a museum. Where would you like to be working? Doesn't matter. Okay.
Good. Yeah. All right. I'm going to stop it.
Yeah.